Welcome to this week's edition of the Leadership Journey podcast. My name is Alan Wilson. I'm the host of the Leadership Journey podcast. And each week, the podcast aims to give you the opportunity to reflect on some of the things that make up a leadership journey. This week, I'm talking to the Reverend Alistair Bill. Alistair is the minister of Saintfield Road Presbyterian Church in Belfast. Well, welcome to Alistair Bill, the Reverend Alistair Bill, to the podcast. Alistair, you're minister of Saintfield Road Presbyterian Church.
Yes, I am.
Yes, which has been in the news not so long ago.
Yes.
For unfortunate reasons.
Unfortunately, we sustained a fire, well, a double fire over a period of 48 hours, sadly from an arson attack. That was the end of July 2016. There mustn't have been much news going that day because we were top of the news bulletin for at least 4 hours.
Yeah, and you're still waiting to get into the building from that?
We have managed to get to the point of having restored our ancillary rooms and our main hall, which we're currently using for worship. We're on what we hope is the last leg towards getting the church, the sanctuary, however you call it, ready for worship, hopefully within the next couple of months.
Yeah, but Easter Sunday would be a great Sunday for that.
Easter Sunday would be a resurrection Sunday.
Fantastic. Alistair, we'll talk more about your ministry in Saintfield Road during the course of our conversation. But just to give us a bit of an overview of what I would call your leadership journey, what have been some of the stages? You know, we'll dig into each of these areas as we go along, but you know, did you grow up in Belfast? What about education? What have been some of the other churches and things that you've been involved in over the years?
Okay, I was brought up in a country village, Temple Patrick, which wasn't a dormitory town for Belfast then. I came from a professional family. My father was a local doctor. I have one sister, and we lived there, but actually came to Belfast for schooling. For second level schooling.
Can you mention what school it was?
It was Belfast Royal Academy.
Okay, well, you're not alienating too many people with that. It was Institute alienating all the Methody people and vice versa.
Well, yes. we beat them both, shall we say. So it was a professional family. I always thought that I got a real sense of duty and of being involved in things. Mm-hmm. And that carried through into school and then university.
And university was?
Unusually, back in the early 70s, I went to Lancaster University in England.
Right.
Then it was only 8 years old, one of the new universities. And that was really important because I had made a commitment, faith commitment, just during my A-levels. Mm-hmm. And it was there that I grew and matured in faith, mm-hmm. in a small Christian union of mm-hmm. just about 40.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then just, you know, broadly from there, how long, was there a career before ministry?
I went to university with a view to becoming an accountant. So I did accountancy and economics. And during the second year of that, felt that the Lord was knocking on the door and saying, you need to think about ministry.
Yeah. So that led to training.
Can we go back a wee bit? That was really important.
I was going to come back to it later. Let's sketch out the big picture and then we'll come back because there's already several things that I want to dig in with.
Okay.
So I made a mental note of the Lord was knocking on the door. Okay.
Yes. So after that, I went directly, having been accepted as a student for the ministry, I went directly to New College in Edinburgh, mm-hmm. where I did 3 years theology, and then back to one final year in what had just become Union College, and then to an assistantship in Larne mm-hmm. For 3.5 years. It was Larne where Angela and I met. Mm-hmm. And then a call to the home mission congregations of Bray, Greystones and Arklow, mm-hmm. where we served for 6 years. And then to County Monaghan, the congregations of Monaghan and Drum. And then in 1994 in September to Saintfield Road, where I'm well into my 24th year
okay.
of service.
Right, fantastic. Well, listen, thanks for outlining that. But let's go back. Growing up, school and so on, one of the things you mentioned there was making an initial commitment to Christ when you were in your A-level year. Talk us through about some of the factors in that. What were some of the things that led up to that?
Well, in terms of family, we were slightly unusual in that we didn't attend worship mm-hmm. every Sunday. Partly that was down to my father being the local GP and not wanting to get asked questions about people's health. Just a wee word, doctor. Were words he came to dread, he told me.
Yeah, and by the way, anybody who's listening to this, if you've got a doctor in your congregation, please let them have Sunday off. You know, if you want to get a consultation, go and see them, or else pay privately and go and see them. Don't interrupt their Sunday, okay?
especially at worship. I'd gone to Sunday school. I'd not been involved much in organisations. There weren't many in our local congregation.
Presbyterian Church.
Mm-hmm. But when I was just going into my teens, my father's medical partner, she was unmarried, she and her mother took my sister and I on holiday to Port Ballantrae. Mm-hmm. And by the providence of God, that holiday coincided with CSSM. Uh-huh. And I went along, really enjoyed it, especially for the games and the opportunity to meet other people. But that was also my introduction to the Reverend David Armstrong of Scripture Union, who we can talk about a little bit later. Mm-hmm. He was very influential. So I went to CSSM. I started to go to church with the one I call my Auntie Sadie, and yet it hadn't really impacted on me. Undoubtedly, God was doing a work because I, through the influence of various CSSM leaders, I took Bible reading notes, I did a correspondence course, and I was being prepared, as I look back, I was being prepared for something. And it was, as I said, during my A-level year that a man called Arthur Blessett, older folks will remember him who carried his cross.
Well, I must be one of those older folks.
Yes, absolutely. You're older than me. He carried his cross for a month round Northern Ireland. That was June 1972, one of the most difficult months of the Troubles. He had there was a meeting in First Antrim, and I remember one thing about what was said at that meeting was that wherever you're going, God's going to be there ahead of you. He's preparing the way, and he'll be there before you, and he wants to be your friend. So from a very sort of institutional type of churchianity, Christianity, I was hearing something quite different, and I was impelled, again in retrospect, by the Holy Spirit to go forward. And lo and behold, when those of us who had gone forward were taken into a back room, the counsellor I was allocated was somebody I knew, older than me, and whom I didn't know had come to faith not very long previously. Mm-hmm. So again, God was mm-hmm. going ahead of me. Mm-hmm. So that was a really important life-changing decision, because going to university, there was nobody else that I knew going. Mm-hmm. Those were not the days when vast numbers flocked across the Irish Sea and the North Channel. There weren't very many Northern Irish, not very many Irish, and certainly not very many Christians in the university. Mm-hmm. So that was a place of... you either stood up for your faith mm-hmm. Or else you sank without trace.
Right. Well, you obviously didn't sink without trace. So what did it look like standing up for your faith in the university?
I mentioned Arthur Blessett. One of the things Arthur Blessett introduced was stickers. We all had Jesus Loves You stickers.
Smiley faces.
Yeah. These were quite unusual. Christians in Northern Ireland were only learning.
Early emojis.
But I had a large sticker. It was about 4 inches in diameter. And I had it on one of my raincoats. And going into a lecture one day, a lassie tapped me on the shoulder and said, "Are you a Christian?" And I said, "Yes, I am." And she said, "I saw your Arthur Blessed sticker. Would you like to come to a prayer meeting?" I'd never been to a prayer meeting before. So I went, and there were about a dozen. And we were praying for the persecuted church. Uh-huh. I remember that very clearly. Uh-huh. And I'd never given any thought to Christians being persecuted. That was for Bible times. That was for the Middle Ages. That was for long ago. But beginning to think about a wider view of church, mm-hmm. and the fact that they were our brothers and sisters.
Yeah.
So that was my first encounter. Mm-hmm. The university in Lancaster is organised on collegiate lines, and each college at that stage had a small Bible study. In my college, no more than half a dozen. Mm-hmm. And those that talk get opportunities to lead, mm-hmm. as I did. Mm-hmm. And then in due course, when elections were going on for the new president, vice president, secretary, etc., I was asked would I allow my name to go forward. And I anticipated that I would be on maybe treasurer, maybe secretary, something like that. But lo and behold, they were putting me up for president. So I became president. And
This is an intercollegiate Christian Union then?
Yes. Lancaster was sort of modelled on the Oxbridge model,
okay.
But it had had a Saturday night CU meeting, and we had some good speakers and some challenging speakers and some speakers that you didn't always agree with, but they got your brain going. One of my responsibilities as president was to look after new people who came. And one of these in my second year was a junior year abroad student from America.
Uh-huh.
Brad, I got to know a bit. And for Easter, he came to share our home and to spend time in Northern Ireland. He helped us out around the house. And about 4 or 5 days before we were due to go back to university, he set off for Dublin, to see Dublin, and then to cross to Holyhead and back for the start of university. Sadly, Brad never made it. He was knocked down by a bus in Dublin, in a coma for a week, and died. By the time he died, we were already back in university, and the following day, his mum and dad, who'd come from America, came to visit. A group of 3 or 4 of us showed them around where he'd stayed, where he played golf, the church he'd gone to, and they met with lots of people. At the end of that afternoon, we had tea in one of the common rooms, and our principal of the college expressed his condolences and best wishes to the family. And his mum, Dorothy, got up and said, "Thank you for this and thank you for today, for what everybody has done." She said, "Brad used to write to me and say he discovered what it was to be a real Christian." She said, "I didn't understand what he meant, but I think I understand it a bit now. I want to be a real Christian too." And was that the point she came to a real faith?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure, but I do know that her life was greatly changed.
Mm-hmm.
She went back home to Rhode Island, to Providence, and her life was turned around, and she became involved in her local church, Episcopalian church. She became involved in evangelism and social action. And I had the privilege of visiting her 3 years further on.
Mm-hmm.
But the point that I want to make here is that about 3 weeks after that, Brad's body having been repatriated to the States, a funeral was being held at his at his place, and we had a memorial service in the chaplaincy in Lancaster, and I was privileged to take part in that. At the end of it, a girl, quietly spoken, came up and said to me, "That was very good. Did you never think of being a minister?"
Hmm.
So that was end of April, beginning of May.
Mm-hmm.
And I had never at that point thought about it.
Mm-hmm.
I seem to remember I just laughed.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed so absurd.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, that was the first of four or five different things that seemed to be God knocking on the door,
okay,
and saying, "It's yes. This is something you need to think about."
Can I backtrack slightly, just okay. on this one? You were chosen to be the president of the Christian Union. What do you think? This would be a hard question to ask or to answer. What do you think people saw in you that made them think that you could do this?
It is a very hard question to answer. I think I always could talk.
Yeah.
Hopefully, most of the time to good effect. But I was comfortable around people.
Mm-hmm.
So to introduce speakers or to engage with new people, that was never a problem for me. And not everybody else could necessarily do that.
Mm-hmm.
I think I also related well to all sorts of people,
mm-hmm.
which I think is important as well.
Yeah. Did you feel any resistance to it? I mean, from what you said earlier on, you thought maybe you'd be treasurer or secretary or something like that. To have the responsibility of president, was there any resistance, or was there something in you that said, "This is exciting"? What I'm getting at here is that there are some people who almost have to be dragged into leadership, the reluctant leaders. And there are others, and they just have a sense almost that this is what I was made to do. Again, hard to look, it's hard with retrospect, I realise, to look back.
I'm not sure I was necessarily a reluctant leader. I think I've always been of the impression that these things are privileges. And to be at the front, shall we say, is a privilege, though also carries significant responsibility.
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
A little side effect to that, I should just mention, is when I first went to university, they were virtually all English people who were there, and quite a lot of Southern English. And one of the guys who was there after about 3 weeks took me aside and said, "Do you mind if I say, we mostly don't understand you? Can you talk more slowly?" So I think I've fallen into bad habits again,
yeah.
But that was a lesson as well.
Yeah.
You've got to be understood.
Yeah, quite.
Whatever you're saying.
Quite, yeah. At least he didn't tell you how to pronounce things. He didn't correct your pronunciation.
I'm sure I had it wrong, and he was just being gracious.
Yeah. Okay, well, this idea of God knocking on the door and beginning to lead you into a sense of, you know, moving towards what I would call vocational ministry. The conversation from that girl who spoke to you about how you had conducted the service, what were some of the other things then that just began maybe to add to this sense of conviction that you needed to be exploring something else?
Later on in that month, our congregation got a new minister. And here was a minister who obviously believed that preaching was important and that the message was something that people had to attend to,
mm-hmm.
and not just something to be got over on a Sunday morning.
Mm-hmm.
So that was important. And later on, when he heard that I was thinking about perhaps applying for the ministry, he could not have been more encouraging or more supplying of opportunities just to talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the first the summer before I went to theological study, he gave me about half a book's worth of Greek instructions. So I started off on the front foot in terms of that. So that was one. Another one, I was involved in a camp at Geismere Boys Camp, and I found myself in a position of leadership there. People looking to you for decisions, for action, how to deal with this, how to deal with that. And I felt very comfortable in that. Then, by that time, I myself was a CSSM leader in Ballycastle, where you had opportunities to minister to boys and girls, to relate to parents, and to work as part of a team. And that, again, was important.
The team stuff.
The team stuff. Because not all of us bring all the gifts to any position of leadership.
For sure, yeah. So this minister then, with his preaching, was there something about that? Am I right in thinking then there's something about that and the way he preached and handled scripture and the importance he gave to that, that appealed to you? Were you almost saying, I'd love to do that?
I'm not sure that was the first thought. I think the first thought might be more, he believes that this is important. And as a congregation, I would say people were gripped and were starting to say, this is important. This is not just something that we go through.
Okay, yeah. What about David Armstrong then? You'd mentioned him towards the beginning. Was he influential during this season of camp work and CSSM? And
he was very influential. He was actually the leader of Ballycastle by the time I came to join a team.
Did he eventually go on to lead Scripture Union?
He was leading at that time.
He was, okay.
I think, called General Secretary.
Yeah.
Now there's a much more high-flying title, but he was General Secretary. And he was SU. SU in the present day is so much bigger, but he was the leader. And yes, there were others working, but he had felt called to ministry with children right from his early days. But he also taught me things about ministry in general. In terms of structures of talks, structures of sermons, the importance of preparation and of prayer, and having all those things well organized so that it would engage with people. We might be sitting at the lunch table in Ballycastle, and I might happen to be beside him, and he would just throw out a little nugget, such as some of those that I have mentioned, and also helped me to understand a little bit about the wider Presbyterian Church in Ireland, and indeed the wider church in Ireland. So that was important. And anything I know about working with children, I learnt from him, or I heard from him, and then relearned later on.
How intentional do you think he was in mentoring you? I mean, at the end of the day, that's what it was mentoring. Do you think that he took you intentionally under his wing, or was it more that you picked up things just by being around him?
I think there was an intentionality, not just for me, but for others. I think at one stage there were 7 of us. Who later became ministers, either in the Presbyterian Church or other churches.
Right, all sort of peers?
All sort of peers.
Yeah,
So I'm sure we all learnt considerably from him.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm sure all of us look back to that as being foundational.
Yeah, it's extraordinary. You know, I think often when you talk with different leaders, people look back and there's somebody there in the past, or a group of people who are there in the past. The way I like to put it sometimes is when you see a turtle on a fence post, you realise that the turtle didn't get there by itself. And none of us gets where we are by ourselves. So it's interesting, I like to look at those people who have influenced us. What about, were there others around that time as well? You know, did you still probably in fairly formative years in terms of your faith, just having really come to faith in your later teenage years.
Yes.
Were there others around that stage that you would look back to?
Yes, there were. Auntie Sadie, Dr. Sadie Kaloch, who continued to pray and support us. The minister in Temple Patrick, the Reverend David Clark, later to be a moderator.
Did he go to Coleraine eventually?
Yes, he went to Terrace Row and exercised his main ministry there. Tom Blackstock, TP, as we called him, then minister of First Antrim, in whose youth fellowship I spent quite a lot of those formative years. So those are some of the people who were very formative in those early years.
Nietzsche, we'll sort of push forward a little bit here, just conscious of we're getting towards the end of this this part of the interview, but those episodes of God knocking the door, that sense of being led to pursue vocational ministry, you obviously then came to a point where you felt this was right, and off you went to Edinburgh to study.
Yes.
Yeah, and that was what, 3 years?
3 years and 3 years in Edinburgh.
Yeah.
And doing a basic theological course in New College, not having opportunity to be involved in a congregation other than casually.
Yeah.
I did do bits and pieces of preaching. I think the main thing for that was coming under the closer influence of some of the Scottish ministers, Jim Phillip, Eric Alexander, folks like that, who had brought expository preaching very much into the church mainstream, and to whom many students went to listen. Although I always said that while Jim Phillip was a good preacher, actually to hear him pray really moved your soul. And his prayers were very much bringing everyone to the throne of grace. And for me, dare I say it, that was more important. I can't remember who it was, but somebody once spoke of their minister as someone who prays as if he knows God. And many of us would like to have that said of us.
Wonderful, isn't it? It's wonderful. Would you say, I mean, that presumably was a very important, I don't quite want to say counterbalance, because that's not the right thing to say, but that was presumably a very important component of your spiritual formation at the same time that you were undergoing a theological training. How important was it to keep those two things together? Both, I dare say your mind was being stretched by the theology, but how important was it that there was also that sort of devotional example that was presented at the same time?
I think it's very important. Some people can do theological study slightly divorced from their faith, but I think that leads to problems down the line. Being a minister then becomes a job, and you need to integrate faith of your heart and faith of your mind and all the thinking about that.
Yeah. Okay, I'll put you on the spot here a little bit, and this is not one of the questions that you're anticipating. Let's say there's a young person listening who's about to head off to theological college. You're planning to do that in the next year. They're going to have a situation where, you know, to some extent their Bible becomes a textbook, and yet at the same time they're wanting their Bible not just to be a textbook that they come to, but it's also a source of life. What advice would you give about holding those two things together?
I think the importance lies in the fellowship, the church, in which they're involved. Because this is not something you can do on your own. Yes, the Bible is a textbook, but you need also to have times of reading it devotionally.
Yeah.
And speaking personally, I found and still find that reading the scriptures with other people, with a view to prayer, is something that keeps you away from just the intellectual, assessing a passage or assessing what somebody has said about the passage. That is a definite danger of falling into that trap, and therefore being a minister is just a job, albeit a vocation.
Yeah, but you got to work at both.
Yes.
Yeah, you got to work at both. They're both vitally important. Okay, so theological training complete. We've gone over that one quite quickly, but you're now in a position then to begin your first assistantship. And I think you said that was in Larne.
That was in Larne with Dr. Victor Linus, who again was very influential as a mentor in the nuts and bolts of ministry. I learned lots of things, sometimes in formal discussions and sometimes just by observing him.
What did you learn from him?
I learned the importance of being organized, the importance of intentional engagement with the people of the congregation. So when I formally started with them, he said, here's a list of the congregation, which was made up of something like 850 families at the time. He said, during the course of your time here, I want you to be at every door. So I didn't have committee responsibilities. So afternoon and evenings, I can't remember how many sessions a week, I visited, and I learned a lot about people. And I learned a lot about myself in terms of the discipline of visiting. I've often quoted something else that I learned at the time, that he was a stickler for time. The service started at 11:30. You walked through the door at 11:30 and you started. Service started at 7 o'clock. You walked through the door and you started. There was one occasion whenever I was heading from home down to do an evening service, and I lost my windscreen. And my father came down, gave me another car, and I carried on, and he took the one without the windscreen back to the house. I arrived at about 3 minutes to seven. The choir were processing in, and I had still had to get robed, as I did on those occasions. That meant I was maybe 3 minutes late going in, and I had no opportunity to say why I was late, but I got a look from the front row. I remember that, and he laughed when I told him. But another point is important. As we waited one Sunday morning to go in to the service, I noticed him shaking. Unwisely, a couple of days later, I asked him, could have been anything, of course, but I asked him, did he still get nervous before his service? He had been moderator, he'd met with secretaries of state as head of the Church and Government Committee, he had done all sorts of things. And he said to me, yes, I do. And the day when you don't get nervous is the day when you don't go up into the pulpit.
Ooh. Wow, powerful.
So I've often quoted that to colleagues and indeed to people in the congregation who are doing something. You get used to it, but you need to be go into the pulpit or up to the platform, depending on God, for the message that he will give and which people will hear.
Yeah, that's a very powerful point. And I think that's a good point for us to finish for this week. Alistair, thank you. We will come back and talk some more. We'll get you from Larne down to your next church and then eventually to Saintfield Road. But thanks for what you've shared about that journey that you were taking on in those early years and some of those really important lessons in relation to ministry. So thank you, and we'll pick this up again next week.
Thank you for taking the time to listen to this week's episode of the podcast, and we'll be back next week, next Tuesday, with part two of the interview with Alistair. He'll talk about some of his ministry, and he'll talk about some of the lessons that he's learned along the way in relation to leadership. Remember that you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or you can get access to other episodes of the podcast either on iTunes or by going to the website yourleadershipjourney.net. And if you'd like to contact me, you can contact me through the website. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.